Welcome to the Round 6 Podcast, a weekly roundtable discussion featuring a variety of automotive subjects, interviews, special guests, and stories, hosted by the Round 6 Gearheads, Brian Stupski, Brad King, Alex Welsh, and Eric Hibbs. Here on Episode 8, the Gearheads discuss the Street Machine of the Year Award and offer their thoughts on different ways to liven up the selection process for the winners. Welcome to the Round 6 Podcast. I'm Brian.
I'm Brad.
I'm Alex.
I'm Eric.
And tonight we're just kind of hanging out and just decided to have a little session. No outside guests, something a little bit different. I figured I'd just bring the guys together. We'd sit around and shoot the crap over, of all things, a Stir the Pot post on Facebook that kind of gained a life of its own regarding the Street Machine of the Year. Needless to say, what started off as a very simple thing, looking at, you know, what the title is, what it's become over the years, and the kind of style of car that wins, which could be a very, very, you know, opinion-based kind of thing with anyone. And actually, we all have our opinions. But we're kind of looking at ways to maybe bring that title up to speed instead of it just being, you know, show up in Columbus and, hey, your car is suddenly the best thing there. I really want to get your guys' opinions because I know there were a bunch of, you know, comments thrown out on that post that really took things in a whole different direction. But just kind of get a feeling for where your guys' heads are at as far as Street Machine of the Year goes.
When did Pro Street become Pro Touring?
Yeah, I'm thinking Pro Touring kind of came about more when 18-inch wheels became common, right? Because that was kind of the adaptation was instead of 15-inch Mickey Thompsons on the back, everybody's running 18s all the way around, then 20s, then what are we at, 33s now?
Well, it depends. If you're in Atlanta, yeah, 33s with goldfish floating around in the middle of them, sure. The new Lexani Aquarius line is going to be big this year.
Aquarius.
Hey, there goes our sponsorship from those guys. The trend continues.
Where's Justin? He'd be making a list right now. The sponsors would just chase off.
Nice.
But no, I think early 90s, that kind of that outgrowth, because Pro Touring kind of grew as that outgrowth of sort of a rebellion against what Pro Street had become.
I agree.
Pro Street had left being, you know, kind of based on pro stock cars and doing trick stuff like that, and became really like just pro fairgrounds cruisers.
Yeah, circus cars.
Right. That's funny. Yeah. Pro fairgrounds cruisers. That's something I haven't heard for a long time.
I figured I'd bring that back, and you know, because I'm working so hard to bring Tweed back, and I figure that and 92 Beretta Teal, that's going to be the big color.
Oh, yeah. Pretty. How about some wink mirrors? Can we go that far back?
Oh, we should.
A five-pound wink mirror.
Heartbeat graphics.
You're going to put Tornado mirrors on the thing, too, to even the thing all out?
Hell, oh, but Testarossa mirrors?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, Testarossa doors, and if you're going to go...
No, Ruxarossa kit. Now we're getting places.
Mercedes-Benz headlight wipers.
Oh, there you go.
Yes. They look really good on a G-body.
Double winch of wipers with the little louver things on them.
You know, the little square headlight ones where the wipers just banging both sides of the bezel.
Knocking all that pink paint off. That's great.
That's right.
You're scratching my Easter egg.
Oh, my God. But I really think, you know, with like Street Machine of the Year has really become Pro Touring Car of the Year. And when you look at it, the judging seems really skewed towards that kind of a build because it's all about just, you know, does it have this look? Yes or no? And can it do its two laps on the autocross? And that's pretty much it. And to me, it just seems like the most exciting part of the whole the competition is, hey, let's watch X shop unload their car from the truck and baby it over to the Pros Picks area and park it.
Next to Y Shop's car.
Exactly. And Maybe that could be a whole competition. Who has the most organized unloading process to drag it out of the cocoon?
Or who can push it to the parking spot the quickest?
Oh, there you go.
And take the shrink wrap off the tires.
Best dressed prep crew.
Choreographed prep.
That'd be awesome.
Well, see, here's the thing with the with this whole thing, the street machine of the year. Okay, at least the drag week guys, if you're driving something, you know, 1,000 miles, 1,200 miles, and beating the crap out of it when you get to the location, and you put it all back together and you keep doing it, you know, guys like, well, it's a six-second car, it's not a street car. Dude, that guy drove that thing 1,000 miles. That's a street car.
Pulling a trailer.
I don't care what you say. He drove the crap out of that car. He beat it up while he was doing it. He wasn't nice to it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I mean, we are at the point with that competition, too, not to go too far off base, but where even that is like old, like top sportsman cars. Like, you know, you see like a 7/8 scale 67 Corvette. You know, with a full, you know, carbon fiber body sitting on a tube chassis. Yeah, granted, it's a full race car, but again, it drove. It survived on the street. The thing's gone over potholes. It's pulled into parking lots at a motel. It's done all this stuff.
So it is a street car. I mean, technically it is. Maybe it's not a daily driver because it is a little ridiculous. You know, you don't want to wound a $100,000 motor, you know, going to work in the thing. But, you know, if you've got a car that's called the street machine of the year, well, it kind of needs to be something you can actually drive.
Exactly. Well,
in my opinion, it needs to be competitive, too.
But oh, yeah. Like in all matters. For what? I mean, in what kind of, you know, you can't have 1/8-inch door gaps and fender gaps and where, you know, it's like all of a sudden it's a Riddler car that, you know, it's like, well, it's got license plates. Yeah, but you can't drive it because you'll just beat the crap out of the thing just pulling it out of the parking lot. So what would constitute, you know, a street car for that award right there? What would you,
you know, there? I'd go, I do a multi event thing, you know, autocross. You know, drag race, braking, just, you know, kind of your typical performance sort of things, and, you know, and score them and score them on performance, not just score them on who's got the 1/8-inch door gap and who has the, you know, 3/1/64 door gap and who has the Lincoln American double wiper blades. Right. Yeah. So, you know, I street machine is, you know, that 70s term of a bitchin' car that hauled ass, you know, and I, you know, that's what conjures up in my mind, not something with a cappuccino maker in the dash.
Exactly. And, you know, this is one of the things, as the thread progressed, I got a lot of people messaging me and saying things like, well, you take away from the high-end craftsmanship. I'm thinking, no, you're going to alter that high-end craftsmanship. Instead of having, again, that human hair with door gap, it's going to require you to think a little bit differently. Sure, you can have uniform, tight gaps, but you're going to have to play that to a point where, is it usable on the street? How much is this car going to flex when it goes over a speed bump?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that, I think that's a higher level. And again, like we talked earlier, do you want to have the car out there that gets praised all over the place because it's got carbon fiber ball joints? Or do you want the kind of car that's like engineered to do a ton of really cool street type stuff? And I mean, granted, you're not gonna have a car that's gonna run, you know, 1.5 G's on the skid pad and crank out, you know, an 8-second time in the quarter mile. You're gonna have to sacrifice in one of two places.
Yeah.
But I think that makes the competition even more stiff. Because some cars are going to excel in certain areas and come up better in other ways. It's almost like saying, okay, I've got a new Challenger. This guy's got a new Mustang. Okay, the Challenger isn't really going to be a great cornering machine. It's a top-heavy, you know, goofy car. Is it going to run like stink, straight line in the quarter mile? Hell yeah, that's what it's great at.
Right.
The Mustang's going to do a little differently. It's going to hold up a whole lot better in the corners. But it's going to sacrifice maybe a little bit in the quarter mile time. So other things are going to come into play. And I really think maybe having like an AMBR style judging for these cars would be great too. You know, pull them in, have a panel of experts there. Have something that's based entirely on the aesthetics. You know, does the car sit right? Because, I mean, anybody can power park a car, air it out, and it looks cool.
Yeah.
How does it look when it's trying to speed bump to get in there? Yeah, how does that car sound when, you know, it's idling through that lineup of judges? And is it engineered properly?
Right. Yeah. You could do that with, well, it's got carbon fiber ball joints. Of course it is.
Well, you know, naturally. I mean, yeah, is the engine set back 1.5 feet to clear the IndyCar style cantilever A-arms up front, you know? If it is, great. Is it done properly?
I keep breaking off the number one spark plug with my throttle foot. Go all the way to the floor, keep breaking that plug off. So, yeah, how far is the engine back? What's back there?
I mean, and don't get me wrong. I want to see a car that, like, it brings in all kinds of new technology. You know, if you're using an Iridium satellite to control, you know, your neutral safety switch, well, great. I'm impressed with you, man. You found a way to put really cool stuff in there.
I can disengage my parking lot from my, or my parking brake from my living room.
On my iPhone.
Use my iPhone.
How great would that be? That's going to, because that's the point we're at, though, where next year it's going to be, and I don't want to drop a shop's name. Let's just say, you know, Hot Rod Guys, you know, their shop, all of a sudden they win because they're, you know, their 57 Chevy can be started using their proprietary app from an iPhone.
They pay on a monthly basis.
Right, which would be amazing. Well, that anything with an iPhone would work. But,
well, so they're going to give an award now for, like, best use of black paint?
No, there's no black paint. That would be carbon fiber wrap.
Oh, everything's carbon fiber. Okay, so there's no more black paint on absolutely everything.
Back to a minute ago, Brad, you had said, you know, we know it's not going to, you know, turn 1.5 G's in a corner and run an 8-second quarter mile, but there's no reason it can't turn, you know, a 1.2 G skid pad and have perfect paint.
Right. Or, you know, or even, the right even run a respectable, like, say that, and there's not a problem. I don't see an issue if you engineer a car properly where that sucker couldn't pull 1.2 G's and still lay down, say, an 11-second quarter mile.
Totally agree.
But what if you didn't build it to do corners? What if you like the big and little look? You know, so you have some sidewall in the back, not the, not that goofy pro street look with 20-inch tires and a 1/2-inch sidewall, which, like, yeah, okay, that's going to hook up, sure.
this is,
you know, where it's got 4 inches of sidewall in the back and, you know, and 165s up front. Well, it's not going to turn.
This is the great part. And I think this is where it would really bridge that gap out. You're not going to have a sea of cars all sitting on 335s. You can have a group of cars out there where one guy is going to go, okay, yeah, I'm going to lose points in the autocross part simply because I've got a sidewall and it wasn't built to that. But man, is he going to clean up and, you know, say you do a 60-foot drag or an 1/8-mile drag.
Right.
He's going to make up his points there. And it's going to cause you to be a little more creative if you're into this to do some really trick stuff in other places.
Well, and there's no, I mean, it's like I had said, a multi-event, you know, SCCA style parking lot, you know, cone race, drag race. Hell, run them at, you know, run them at Maxton Mile or something like that.
Oh, imagine, really?
Ooh.
I mean, why not? I mean, dude, I'd love to see a 32 Roadster run up against, you know, say something like a 69 Charger. They're completely opposite ends of the spectrum, but both end up being serious competitors. It's like those two Chargers that we saw at SEMA, the white one and the green one. I mean,
oh yeah.
Oh my gosh. Would you love to see those compete in something like this? That'd be unreal.
And here's the great part too. Yeah, you're putting a lot of risk out there.
Yeah.
But I think, imagine how far this is going to push the envelope on safety, reliability.
Oh, for sure.
And again, pure engineering. I mean, the point of building a street machine early on wasn't to slap together something that just looked really bitchin'. That's what street rotting's about.
It had to go fast.
Exactly. The point was to modify a car well beyond what it originally was.
Right.
I mean, we're at the point now where, don't get me wrong, again, I wouldn't throw a whole hell of a lot of the cars that have placed in the top 5 over the past 10 years for Street Machine of the Year out of my garage any day of the week. But what I have an issue with now is it's basically late model drivetrain swap, boost the hell out of it with a couple turbos, and then just kind of go crazy with goofy stuff. And there are certain cars, like it was mentioned in that thread, where I hinted at the fact that if you look at some of these cars, they're really just rip-offs from like car body design. Somebody went on there and went, oh, here was a Jaguar concept car from 2014. What a cool dashboard. We're going to steal that whole idea and throw it into this, you know,
right.
Mustang 2. Whatever, you know. And I mentioned just the fact of doing that, and a certain car, just like four people were like, oh, do you mean? And I'm like, oh, it's kind of funny how certain cars just come to mind. It would be so much more than that. And I want people pushing the envelope. Yeah, I want to see custom mods to a car, because I love custom body work on a car. I'm a design guy by trade. That's what I like. But if you throw something down that is super well engineered, where somebody's developed, you know, a chassis for this car that does cool stuff, and I don't think that's going to take away from any of the whole sponsorship thing like we talked about off air. I mean, we know there's companies out there that provide a lot of great products. I think if anything, it'd be neat to see these products pushed even further.
Yeah.
Well, sure. But those very same products that we're talking about shouldn't be the deciding factor on who wins, because, you know, they happen to be advertising in some particular publication or something. It's like, no, that should have no relevance to who's actually going to win this award here.
Yeah, I don't think that should be, there should never be a part where X manufacturer, you know, had so many pages of print in these titles, which happen to be our sponsor for this. That then it becomes pay to play, and that's kind of what ruined music, if you think about it.
Oh, for sure.
If you want to go back to like punk shows and things like that, the minute hell, look at like the LA hardcore scene. Now we're getting really off topic here.
Boy,
but it's relevant.
It is, yeah. At one point, it was really good bands coming through and all kinds of stuff, and all of a sudden, it became this, you know, pay to play thing. And, you know, after that, everything kind of declined. It just fell apart. That's my fear for this. I never want to see this industry become something that's ho-hum.
You know, sadly, I'm getting to that point with it right now. And I'll be honest with you. I see these pro touring cars, and it's I have to strain to even mention that term because I freaking hate it. And I do. But sorry, Jeff.
Exactly.
But, you know... But the problem is, it's become a thing now where everybody's handed a recipe book. Here, guys, here's the books that you can build your cars with. 335s in the back. Tuck the bumpers front and rear. If you got a 5-axis mill, go ahead and make yourself a grill. There's certain companies for your subframe, certain companies for your rear end, definitely one or two companies for your brakes. And here you go, guys. And it's got me to the point to where I'm not liking this style at all. It's like... I love Pro Street, but there was a period when I didn't like Pro Street after a while. There was a certain car that showed up by a well-known builder. After that, I said, I'm done with this. And done with Pro Street for a while. Now that I just like a car with basically stock body mods, sitting with the right wheels and tires, and sitting with the right stance, and something you could turn a key in, you could drive it to New York if you wanted to.
Right.
And that's the stuff I like now. You know, all this body mods and these $1.5 million cars, I'm totally turned off by it. And they're nice cars, you know, but we went to SEMA, I'm walking around, and sadly, I'll walk right past one of those cars. I should be looking at it. It's got some great work. It's got a lot of ingenuity and everything, but it's just like, dude, I'm just oversaturated with these things.
Well, it's like people just throw money at it until it's done. They don't know when it's going to be done. It's just like, I don't know if it's when they run out of money or when there's just nothing left to do.
See, I'm a huge first-gen Camaro fan. Love those cars. But I tell you, of all the pros touring cars and everything, to me, they all look identical.
Right.
A 67 Camaro and a 69 Camaro look quite different. But when you pro tour one and you do all the same stuff with each other, basically, they almost look like clones.
Well, it's like walking through a Toyota parking lot, you know, a Toyota dealership. They all look the same.
They all got that same brown style.
Oh, yep. That one's silver.
Well, they all run the same wheels, too. You know, there's like one wheel manufacturer everyone.
So hopeful that the next style is going to come out and it's going to supersede that whole pro touring thing.
Well, we
and
may I'm just be on to it tonight.
Next one to come around. And I'm just, I don't know. I just think it's had its run and I'm just done with it.
Exactly. Yeah. I agree 100%. I mean, Pro Street did the same thing too.
Yes. Oh yeah. There was I don't know. I'm not going to mention names, but there was a Pontiac J2000 that came out that for me.
What? Well, for which me? One?
I don't know. Yeah. Which one?
The bright
was it the orange one or the orange one?
Okay. The one with valve springs for rear suspension. That one.
That car came out, and I'm like, well, this fad has now jumped shark. Cool car. There's a lot of people that love it. And when it came out, I thought it was clever and cool, but it changed everything. Yep. Yeah. It just took it and said, okay, guys, that's it. You know, pack them up.
It was crazy detailed to the max.
It was crazy. The car was amazing.
It's a beautiful car.
The premise behind this whole style was to a certain point, certain look, certain everything. And now you've just taken this thing and you've just marched it into the stratosphere. It's like, it's over.
Yeah, march it into the stupid fear.
Yeah, unplug it. It's done. It's time for the next trend or whatever. And then, you know, everybody kind of got into, after that point, sport trucks were really hot and trucks had their run for a while. And now trucks are back again. And I already hate that style that's out now. So,
well, yeah, and that, again, it's another one. It's like, one thing.
I don't even want to get into the truck thing. That's another recipe book fan.
We should do
that's a whole other podcast there. We'll keep that one for later.
And I love trucks. I'm a truck fan. And I look at some of these things, and it's like, congratulations. You just built a truck that looks like the same truck that somebody built 15 years ago. everybody's building the exact same truck.
Yeah, that's so true.
Like the square body thing. I mean, that was a great trend. It ate itself. Another term.
Stop.
Yeah,
saying.
Don't say that word ever again.
Well, I'm waiting for somebody to build a Tri-5 square body for you, Red. A pro touring Tri-5
square body.
That's it. I'm going to come up with a fiberglass kit to do that now.
So D-spokes.
Trademark it
so
right now.
So when the 88 to 98 trucks start becoming real popular, are they going to be like the... I don't know,
the round body?
Obtuse body, or
no, that's,
can we
no,
come
that's
up with some
the,
sort of geometric shape.
That's the NO. That's the NOBS.
Isosceles style.
No, that's the NOBS. New old body style. New
nice.
Body? Yeah, no, that really is. That's what. That's
are
what
you
they
driving
refer to
a
the
knob?
80 to 90
I've
is.
Got a knob.
I got some knob. I got some knobs.
I was good with pro isosceles. I thought that would actually work. Some other
in the paint is roasted garlic.
Oh, there'll be a callback.
This
to like
smells
colors.
Like pizza.
Pro pentagram.
You know, I was thinking about this though. When you mentioned building a car you could drive to New York, Alex.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, maybe that's the end game of this whole like new way we're trying to do things. So maybe it becomes instead of just a year long thing, at some point, you know, because everything becomes extreme and nothing's ever good enough for anybody. You know, it's like.
Yeah.
It's like base jumping was good. Okay, well, diving out of a balloon at the edge of space became better. Yeah. This would be...
And then everybody had to do that.
Well, because, yeah, you know, that happens once a week now. And that's how you make your comeback. Danny Bonaducci is going to do that next week. And it's going to be awesome. Pay-per-view thing. But, like, how cool would it be at some point where it just becomes so extreme like that, where they're like, okay, Street Machine of the Next 5 Years Award. We're going to start off here. The car's got to last like 3 years in the Rust Belt.
Under a carport with no
coastal Florida.
And then it's going to sit in the summer in Phoenix in Brian's driveway.
Yeah.
But it out of
how much oil
it
loses while it sits will be, it'll be judged according to that.
Oh my God. Yeah, I mean, granted, okay, and you could trace anything back and break this whole episode down to, okay, there's always a trend. It at some point, I mean, any popularity breeds contempt. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen that way, you know, because there's always the guy who was first on the scene.
Right.
But, you know, like, okay, the pro street thing, yeah, it ate itself because it became about how far could you take it? Well, okay, yeah. Well, this guy built a stainless steel chassis. Well, I'm going to polish an entire stainless steel chassis.
Yeah.
And
when,
that
you
was
start,
ins-
when you start
that
doing
was
things
insane.
For shock value, it's over. It's over.
Right.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Well,
like,
that's the same thing. That is rat rod.
Exactly.
That's precisely. Where this is going. I mean, it's just
where gassers are going right now.
It's just sadly the level of stupid because you've got to outdo everybody else because your car looks just like everyone else.
You've got to out rat the next guy. You've got to build a bigger piece of shit than the other guy.
This would be a great place for a skull and a Maltese cross and a water spigot.
Yeah. And my rusty barbed wire headliner.
Yes.
Right. And
everybody carries.
What's that?
Everybody carries tetanus, you know, shots when they go to their shows.
No, you wear German war helmets when you drive it.
You know? Awesome. Yeah. We're on safari. Great. Everybody's got a pith helmet. Awesome.
That's only acceptable at El Mirage, I think.
Yeah, but to the pro touring thing. I think one of the things that's kind of got me so turned off to that style is that now everything is so expensive. Even if you're building it at home and you're a home builder, but you went to this place to get the frame and this place to get the wheels and this, it's way out of the budget for 98% of the guys out there. And to me, that turns me off. I'm still the guy that likes crawling through wrecking yards, that likes digging for sales or for things to buy in Craigslist and OfferUp. And I still like fabricating things. And I still like doing stuff. And those styles are so far out of what I want to do. And I look at everything that's going on right now. It's not just pro touring. It's the trucks. You know, a lot of that stuff, you know, some of the suspension components and stuff there, you know, they're expensive. You know, I don't want a vehicle that lays on the pinch welds. I want one that sits right. You know, I don't want one that, you know, one bad airline and next thing you know, I'm stranded on the side of the road.
Right.
You know, or I've got these tires that, you know, they've had a half inch of sidewall and they're $600 a piece. That's just not in my budget. It never will be.
You hit a pebble and you dented your $2,200 wheel.
Yeah. Yep. It's like, I don't know. It's hot rodding has become where it's not the average guy's hobby anymore. Now it's the guys that have a lot of money or don't mind just completely trashing their credit cards just to stay, you know, current. And I think the part of hot rodding that made it so cool were the guys that didn't have much money and fought their way through these things. You know, they built really cool stuff out of stock parts. The thing sat right. It, you know, a lot of things that didn't cost a lot of money, but just took a lot of thought, took a lot of planning. Those are gone now. Everything is all order this out of the catalog, order that out of the catalog, take it to this guy's shop, take it to that guy. And it's just like, come on, guys, you need to get back to the roots again. You guys have gone way over where now it's all about everybody's got to have this wheel and they've got to have that brake. And it's like, it's over. I don't like it. So
I'm with you.
You know, I think we're all in the same boat. And it's pretty clear is that we want cars that are enjoyable to drive, not just fun.
Right.
Because there's a big difference between fun and enjoyable. Enjoyable means I can throw my wife the keys and she can drive 200 miles and I don't have to worry about her.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, you know, these ridiculous builds that we keep on seeing come through are just, I just shake my head. And I think, you know, I see some of this stuff. I think, shit, I could have, you know, bought a house, bought a ranch and built a 6,000 square foot shop and filled it with 200 hot rods for the price that this guy paid to have somebody else build his car.
Yeah,
and so the worst part is that car's forgotten about 11 months later.
It's over. Yeah. It's over. And then it rolls across the block at Barrett Jackson for 1/5 of the price it took to build it.
Yep.
You're lucky. See that all the time.
If you're lucky to get away with that.
There have been cars where I've seen roll across, and I'm like, okay, that covered the paint job and maybe the motor.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the thing I don't get, and don't get me wrong, I want to see. There's got to be like a pinnacle build out there. There should always be something like that. Because, I mean, you know, if you didn't have somebody building something like, say, the Sears Tower or St. Peter's Basilica, that's, you know, it becomes like that benchmark where somebody says, hey, this is, you know, as far as we could push the engineering for that time, and it's a cool thing.
Yeah.
But I think we're at that point, like you mentioned, Alex, it's so far out of range. We're at the point where a renaissance in the hot rod world isn't going to be the next big, you know, again, the carbon fiber ball joint or the Kevlar rim with a diamond encrusted center, you know.
Yeah.
Instead, it's going to be the guy who shows up and goes, oh, I've got 275 6015s on the back of this car, and it sits super bitching. But when you look at it, the gaps are perfect.
Yeah.
You know, what looks like maybe a stock tail lamp bezel. Jeez, I'm still caught up on the whole windshield wiper thing. You know, a stock tail lamp bezel. I'm like, there it is again. Anyway, you got these really trick trim parts, right? That look stock. that maybe were 3D printed or milled. You know, I want to see something that pushes the envelope that way. Sure, use technology, mm-hmm. but make it usable and approachable. Because, I mean, we're at the point now where I really think it's a turnoff if you're like, hey, did you see so-and-so's car that won Street Machine of the Year? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that was $1.5 million. And you're like, for what?
Yeah.
Right.
Did it make it on Power Tour? Oh, no. Why would you take it on that? You can't drive that car. Exactly. Well, what's the point? That'd be like building a house so cool and having like the world's greatest architects work on the thing and go, well, it's a great house. Oh, but you can't live in it. That's way too nice to live in.
Yeah. So why don't they just rename the thing? It's Trailer Machine of the Year.
Yeah, there you go. Sponsored by Featherlight.
that would be the problem. Whoever has the baddest ass, you know, trailer would win that.
Trailer, yeah. But that guy won. It was the coolest trailer there.
Well, we talked earlier, Brad, you and I, and we kind of threw the idea around of starting almost like I want to do this, and I want to throw this past you guys. We'll just do it on air. The hell with it. I want to start like a secret society where we get together a group of guys who are obviously great builders. Maybe you have like a guy who's a great chassis guy, a great driveline guy, a painter extraordinaire, an interior trim guy who's, you know, just of no equal. Get these guys together and we develop an award that we hand out once a year to a car that just embodies everything that's like great design, great engineering, usability, you know, smart use of funds, you know, where you're not like, well, the paint itself was made by squeezing this rare ocelot's big toe. You know, I want to see something that's like, you know, dude, that guy used an off-the-shelf color, but check out the way that, you know, he surrounded that color with this kind of pinstripe or this graphic.
And that wasn't vinyl.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, you can't have a $1.2 million car with Cal Custom, you know, pinstriping tape on it. I'm sorry. There's
think
certain
about
things
how brave
you can't
that
glue
is.
Smeared.
Think Prisma. About how brave that is, Brad. The risk they took at that tape catching on the cover as they pulled it off.
Oh god, that's true.
That would have been great to watch that peel off.
Just that along with a huge chunk of tinted clear.
And what's funny is I saw it from, I mean, I stand on the car and I look down and the first thing I noticed and I went, no. And I showed Alex, I said, I want you to look at this. He goes, what? I said, seriously? He goes, holy crap. Yeah.
Sadly, I disliked that car long before you showed me that.
The look on your face when you walked over to me, I was like, there's something seriously wrong with this car. Like, did you notice? And I was like, that's a dude who's pissed. I was like, this has got to be good. And I was thinking, what's wrong? Did they like accidentally, like, did they make the car like an AMC Pacer? Is the passenger door a foot longer? I keep thinking about what if we developed an award like that? And it's not sponsored by anyone. We just designed this really bitchin' award and there's no fanfare about it. You just show up the next morning to say, like, dust your car off at, you know, at the Detroit Autorama, and sitting in your display is this award with a cool little letter that just says, hey, here's why we chose your car.
Yeah. That'd be rad.
I think that would be super cool. And especially if they find out later on, you know, they look at the signatures and go, holy shit, this is a who's who.
The Illuminati.
Yeah. Hot Rod Illuminati, man.
The Illuminati.
Only we spell it Illuminati, like
like the material, like the metal.
Yeah, but yeah, aluminium and Illuminati.
The billet alarm. The billet of whatever.
You see close a bunch enough. Of guys with a strange handshake at SEMA. Everybody's doing this really weird handshake. They're part of the Illuminati. Like,
everybody has to, you know, pass out hula hoops. It's a whole show.
Oh, that'd be awesome. To be at the annual passing of the hula hoop.
You got the fruit hat, you know, it's the whole thing.
I think you're gonna be a tinfoil hat.
which is again the aluminum Mahdi there.
Nice.
the billet aluminum Mahdi. Is that what it is?
This could be awesome.
But, like, I want to see that kind of stuff celebrated. And don't get me wrong. Again, there's something really cool about looking at a car and going, wow, these guys did something really trick. I would have never thought of that.
Yeah.
But when you look at a car and somebody has to point out to you, it's like, well, did you notice the grill? And you're like, yeah, it's stock. Oh, no, it's not stock. That was made from this rare earth element that we mined out of this small place in Chile. And it can only be found. It has to be done by a one-legged man named Earl.
Yeah. It's our 12-axis plasma mill built that.
Right. It's like,
plasma mill.
Why? It's like, because we could. Okay, so it looks just like the factory grill. Yes. We worked really hard to coat it in a coating that looks exactly like the factory grill. Okay.
Yeah, but this so grill goes to 11.
The factory grill? You're back to that whole, because it goes to 11.
But see, all this whittled out stuff, but that car we were talking about with the tape stripe on it that I was so turned off by. There was a pickup next to that, and I actually loved the pickup that was next to it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't all billet weirdness. It was like the door panels. That was an amazing little feat in itself, because it was, you could start with something from, you know, you could start from a wrecking yard deal. You know, when you get a door panel off of a, you know, Cadillac Escalade, and you cut it into 9 or 10 pieces and section it where you make this door panel fit, you glue them all together again, and then you cover it with some material, and you have this door panel, and you go, dude, that's awesome. Well, anybody with a little imagination and some, you know, and has a little bit of skill, you know, cutting and kind of gluing things back together, put some effort into it, you could do the same thing. It wasn't anything you needed a 5-axis mill for. You didn't need $1 zillion. You could sit down in your living
room. See, that's
piss
where
off
I'm
your
coming
wife
from.
And make your own stuff. You know, I mean, it's you can do this stuff. I love that kind of, which is what you were talking about, Alex. It's that kind of thinking. You don't need to have $1 zillion. You just need to put some effort in.
And you know what that truck did for me? What got me about that truck, it wasn't even just the fact that it was so well done. I mean, you could sit there and take that thing in for hours. But what got to me, there was an emotional attachment to it. That truck embodied everything that I did as a kid when I built model cars. You know, you're kit bashing things. And it was literally a 1-to-1 scale kit bash that was so well thought out. And like I said, with the door panels, I was like, dude, like, I mean, if, you know, for anybody who built model cars as a kid, for me, it was never just, oh, I need to buy this kit because it has these wheels and I'm done.
Right.
It was like, hey, I'm going to find a way to put this chassis under that car and use this dashboard and fit this. And it was always sitting there with the X-Acto knife and cutting the hell out of everything and molding everything together.
Including your fingers.
Always.
Of course.
Cutting and gluing.
Oh, yeah.
Always. And, you know, for me, that truck embodied that. It took me back to that, but on like a grand scale. That's what was so cool about that truck.
See, and what was so funny about that truck is that when I saw it, at first, I didn't care for it at all. I mean, like, oh, geez, another slammed F-100. You know, it's like, nah. I mean, I've seen a million of them. And then the more I looked at it, I mean, every square inch of that truck had been worked and had been done so tastefully that at first glance, it looked almost stock, and it was anything but. And, you know, the more I looked at it, the more detail I saw it, until the point where I absolutely fell in love with the truck within 5 minutes. And at first I didn't like it at all. I was like,
well, how many times did we walk around that truck as a group?
The whole,
when you thought you saw everything, one of us would go, dude, did you see this? And it was like, no.
And it was all stuff that you could, like, it was so funny is the guy that built it was so nonchalant about it. He wasn't a jerk. He wasn't cocky. It's like, hey, did you look under the hood? What do you mean? Did you look at the bottom side of the hood? He goes, look underneath the hood, you know? And you go, okay, you look underneath. Well, the guy chopped up another hood to fit on the inside of the bracing. So it looked like the top side, but there was no bracing there. You go, okay, this is amazing. And there again, it's not a $1 zillion deal. This is just taking your time to do something different. That thing lit me up. That was probably my most favorite, one of my most favorite vehicles at SEMA because of all that stuff. It wasn't this carved out of aluminum and you didn't, it wasn't a gazillion dollar. Well, it was because it was so many hours of labor, but it was stuff that anybody that took some time and effort could do.
I mean, that's a perfect example of what we're talking about, is just thought and taking your time to build something unique, tasteful, and well-engineered.
But see, you could even do it like this one person we've been kind of talking about that wants to do the Street Machine of the Year thing. You know, he's talking like 75, 80 grand that's tied up right there. Well, you know, not his labor, but just actual materials. I had to buy this. I had to buy this. You know, I mean, there are certain things you have to buy. There's sure, just no way around course. It. And that's just part of having a car. But, you know, not counting his labor, this is what I have into this car. And I did everything in my garage. It's like, well, okay. So, you know, for 80 grand, you know, that is $1 million car. I mean, you look at that and you go, dude, how many years do you have into this car? This is nuts. Yeah,
could anybody else replicate that just the way you did it? Well, sure. But they didn't. That was the first one. So,
right.
I think that's where the bragging rights are going to be at. Yeah, I want to see a car that inspires something else. But mm-hmm. to a point, again, I don't want to see 52 red first-gen Camaros on forged line wheels with, you know, all the same crap. It's been done.
Yep. See, that guy, he built a streetcar, you know, the chassis and all the pieces underneath, they're all chassis black. They're all semi-gloss black. Mm-hmm. Right there, you're going, okay, you're now my hero because you made this thing to drive. You don't have to, I mean, if you want to lay underneath and make it all detailed, you can, but it's not going to be like, you know, a yellow undercarriage where you're going, oh God, it's going to take me a week to clean this thing off for my last road trip. Drive the thing, you know?
Right. Exactly.
Which is now back to this
one-off milled A-arms that if they get a chip in them, you know, you're like, well, I can't just, you know, recoat it. No, we have to go out and we have to mill a new arm for it.
Yeah. Well, this is all, you know, something that anybody could pretty much do. I mean, you know, is $80,000 a lot of money? Well, of course it's a lot of money. But if you want to play, you know, like Eric, I mean, your Roadster, you know, by the time you get done, you're going to have some money tied up in that Roadster, whether you want to or not. You know, Alex has got some money in his truck, whether he wants to or not. It takes money to build a car.
Right.
You know, I don't have a ton of money in my truck, but I still have to spend money. It's not like you're going to do it for free because you still have to buy stuff. So, you know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. You have to spend money, but do you have to spend $1 million? No.
Oh, hell no.
And nor should
you. If you can't do anything yourself and you want to take it to, you know, brand X, big name, big dollar, $500 an hour shop. Yeah. If you've got the money to burn, why the hell not? But I don't. And those guys that do that, this is my opinion, but I think they're missing the entire point of hot rodding.
Yep. Or street machining. I mean, that right back to that original or original start of the conversation here. You know, if you know, whether you pay somebody, that's fine. If you got $500,000 in it, that's fine. But I want to see some rock chips in that thing. I want to see it at cruise night, look inside, and it's got a burger wrapper on one side and a bunch of fries where you were sitting on the other. You know, and you go, yep, the guy's been driving his car. I like this guy. You know, there's some muck on, you know, from me carried in there from his shoes. And you go, yeah, this is a car that gets driven. I like it already.
Yep.
For me, I'd rather see a truck like Brad's sitting next to a high-end vehicle. I'll look at Brad's truck more because of the creativity that he took to put it together. You know, I'd rather see something that's been, you know, bandsawed and TIG welded together versus, you know, spent, you know, 15 hours in a five-axis CNC cutting away to build this billet piece, you know.
Hey, give me home-built cars. I want to see.
I like home-built stuff, which is very, very well thought out things. Right. I kind of dig seeing, this part came out of a Chevelle and I got this out of a truck and this is out of an import car, but they're all put together and everything integrates well. It's all painted up, you know, nice and cool, but it's all stuff that you could probably source from a wrecking yard or an auto parts store or, you know, something that's not so tricky. If you break down on a road trip, stuck, you could go to Napa and go, hey, I need a power steering pump for this, or I need a, you know, neutral safety switch for this.
You know, right, exactly.
Yeah, some of these things are so trick, they become pretty one-dimensional. You're not going to want to go on a 600-mile trip. because if the power steering pump breaks, you got to call the vendor that made it, and he ain't open, and he ain't got one.
Yeah, it's Friday night. Yeah. It takes a week on the machine.
Yeah, right. Or that custom serpentine belt you got on there? Yeah, that's our proprietary link. You can't find one of those. You can't find one in an auto parts store. You will not find it. Right? It's a 11 rib belt instead of a 10 rib belt. You know? Yeah.
I just, man, don't get me wrong. I mean, I love the fact that we live in a world today where you can go out and there's actually a vendor out there that will manufacture flush fit glass to your exact, you know, form that you send.
Right.
How cool is that? But, okay, on the same token, we're as cool as that is. Do you need to have $1 million build again that sits on, you know, this hydroform chassis that was made on the space shuttle? Why?
Yeah.
It looks really cool when it's sitting, you know, in the magazine coverage. No.
There's a shop here in town that does amazing, amazing builds. High dollar, high end, high performance handling cars. Well known. And they did, this has probably been 8-10 years ago. They built a CUDA and they did all flush fit glass on this CUDA. Side, front, back, everything. $40,000 in glass.
Right.
I'm like, you could build an entire 32-3 window.
I don't want to badmouth. This is where, you know, we start kind of walking sideways here, because I don't want to pick on these guys, because these guys with the you know, water cooled checkbooks, you know, thank you for these guys.
Again, because it's super inspirational, like we talked about before.
Well, you get to have somebody, you know, we've talked about different builders that, you know, Alex and Brian and myself and Eric that we go, we love what these guys do. Well, thank goodness you have guys that are willing to pay that kind of money, you know, $1 million or whatever, to build this amazing work. It's a work of art. I mean, it's an absolute work of art. So I don't want anybody to think that I'm bad mouthing those, because they're amazing. There's some, you just look at those and you just drool, but you've lost the whole street thing. You know, are you going to drive a $2 million car to the post office, go get a Coke in the thing and then do some more? No, it's going to sit in the garage.
And for ice cream.
Yeah. It's not going to happen. It's going to sit in the garage and get loaded on a trailer and maybe dropped off at a fairgrounds, and which is fine, but you're no longer in a street car. It's just a trailer queen is all it is. You know, that just looks pretty. So yep,
totally agree. Well, and I don't have an issue with, you know, spending $45,000 on flush fit glass. I mean, it's your money, spend it how you want. I just, this is me.
Well, you probably spend that a month in tacos. So,
dude,
well, no. it's 55, but but yeah, you know, I just teach their own. I won't criticize somebody else for doing that. And the level of the build was that, it was to that degree where it's like, oh yeah, hey, let's throw flush fit glass in it. And the car was amazing. It was to die for. Not my thing, but you know, I look at those things and I just think, geez, you know, I could build two pretty cool hot rods for that kind of money, just because they want flush fit glass.
Well, and I think it comes down to, again, there's that weird point where somebody has to do something to set the bar. Yeah. You know, like if you look back at Cadzilla.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's a car that's so trick and one off. But if you pull up Cadzilla's skirt, what's under it? Corvette suspension, Coney coilovers.
Frame's not real overly trick. It's a fairly simple deal.
Exactly. But the thing is, that's a car that had the hell driven out of it too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
They drove it cross country.
Yep.
You know, and again, so I mean, there's kind of a weird line between, I mean, and that's a one-off car. If somebody T-boned that car when it was on one of its road trips, it's pretty much over.
Yeah.
You're not going to go down to, you know, and just go, hey, well, we'll get a door out of a wrecking yard.
Take it to the Cadillac dealership and have them fix it.
Yeah. Can you imagine pulling that into a dealership body shop?
Oh, Earl Scheib, no, paint any car.
But back to Eric's point about the $40,000 glass. You know, the guy with a disposable income that can go and spend $40,000 on glass, yeah, he can spend it. But the average home built guy, he's going to go, I want flush fit flush fit glass. He's going to go to his local material yard and buy the material thickness that he needs to push the windshield out and tighten the windshield gaps up. He's going to do it for, you know, maybe a couple of $100 in material, a lot of hours, but he's going to do the same thing.
Exactly. So it's like tack some rod in there.
Well said.
Move the clips and do what he's got to do.
Right.
See, and this is
time and thought. You know, it's not money.
And this is, I think, where this is the difference is. Like, okay, if we're regular guys. I mean, we're all, we've all done the parent thing. You know, we're just working stiffs. So to us, building a car, we're going to rely a lot more on ingenuity and the talents of our friends and things like that. I think this is kind of the difference. Like, okay, if we were looking to go on vacation, we're going to go, hey, we're going to stay at someplace really cool. Whoa, where are you going to stay? We're going to stay at the Hampton Inn that's 2 miles from the park. Why? Because I got a Groupon and this and that. And to us, that's going to be really cool because it comes with a continental breakfast and things like that.
Yeah.
Do they have tacos?
No.
Not a continental lunch, continental breakfast.
So dude, tacos are not just for lunch.
Breakfast burritos. See? Done.
If you want to wrap a couple of eggs in a napkin and eat it, I guess you can call that a taco.
You got me now.
Taco. He's up. Dude, Eric's in there with the pancake maker. Coming up with his own tortilla.
Trying to make taco shells in his room.
But like, somebody on our level is going to look at a hotel like that.
Sure.
Now, granted, okay, if you're in the point where, you know, you've got a few hundred million in the bank or whatever, yeah, you're going to look at it a little differently. You're going to stay at the place that, you know, you're going to pull up onto the gold-plated driveway and some guy named, you know, Tyler is going to pick up your car and whisk it around to the back. And, you know, you're going to show up in your room and, you know, Rosita's going to come up and she's going to pull down your, you know, your sheets at the end of the night and leave you, you know, a Godiva chocolate on an ivory plate. That, to you, that's what you're looking for. You know, I mean, I think there's that weird kind of separation. And it's cool because it's something to aspire to. You know, who doesn't want to be taken care of like that at some point? I mean, I'd love it.
Yeah.
But would I want to do it all the time? No, it's not what I'm accustomed to. I derive more joy. And this is where I have the hard time as a designer. I get to work with shops that can do things like the one-off glass that was made, you know, that was sourced from parts left over from Hubble. And, you know, again, where it's like, hey, we need some pearl for this paint. Well, find this woman named Pearl and we're going to buy one of her teeth and grind it down. And that's how we're going to make it. And where it's, you know, what can you come up with for a dashboard? And I can really stretch my imagination and go, here, we're going to do this with these undercuts and all kinds of cool stuff just because we can. I'm going to build my own car, though, I'm going to really think it through and go, okay, I don't have a 5-axis machine that's going to mill out the form for this dashboard that some guy's going to, you know, lay the carbon fiber into. Instead, I've got to go, how can I build this using crap from Home Depot?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know,
and make it so it doesn't look like it came from Home Depot.
Right. I want it to look like it was made from stuff from Lowe's and then covered in tweed. You know. But like,
we're back to tweed again, aren't we?
Micro suede.
Tweed is coming. Oh, tweed and micro suede. Oh,
they're coming back.
If that doesn't make it, crushed velour. But the point being, like, if, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, it serves to inspire people. I mean, you know, you look at a place like Venice and you're, wow, that was an engineering marvel. Okay, yeah, sure, you look at Venice and it inspires you, but you might live in, you know, West Bumblefuck, you know? So you're going to do your best to maybe lay out really cool landscaping around your house in a way that you like. So I think it really boils down to, yeah, these million-plus-dollar builds serve a purpose as far as inspiring someone. But when they become the norm, when it's the only way to get into a top five someplace, and it's only celebrated because they spent, you know, 1 million plus, you know, again, milling a factory looking grill, you know, paying some guy, you know, 26 hours just to machine the sucker. That, to me, that's stupid.
Right.
The point is lost. The whole point of hot rodding. Yeah, there's an engineering thing. I don't think there's been a real groundbreaking use of materials in the past 2 years on any car that's placed in the top five. You know, there's been nothing that's come out there and gone, hey, what did this guy do? Oh, dude, he used this this computer-controlled bone saw that they threw out from the Mayo Clinic to make this. Well, that would inspire. Yeah, I'd be like, hey, that's really trick, man. What did they make out of it? They made a shifter knob. Oh, okay. You know, that's kind
of
cool.
Put one of Pearl's teeth in the middle of it.
Oh, the guy actually donated his femur and he built a shift knob out of it.
His femur.
It's all hollowed up. That tooth is floating in the middle of it. Like, how did they do that? Oh, dude, it's magnetics. You wouldn't need to know. How long does the battery last? 2-3 million years. Who knows? It'll be an oddity after society falls apart.
It's got a flying eyeball graphic with a real eyeball that he fought in Mexico.
And it's weird because it follows you while you're moving around.
With a USB camera inside.
Oh, see, or you can control it via your app, you know?
Right.
I got the used eyeball app. That's the one I want.
All comes full
circle. Facebook Live.
Literally, it's the my iPhone app.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I think going back to it, Street Machine of the Year has really, it's lost that whole thing. It's like if you went to see a remake of Jaws, the movie, right? You'd expect it to be about a shark.
Right.
You know, and a couple guys who obviously need a bigger boat. Instead, what do we end up with? You go to see Street Machine of the Year, and it's not what you're thinking if you were brought up in our era.
Yeah.
If you said Street like Machine and showed me a pro touring car, I'd go, not really.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what Disney has done to the Star Wars franchise.
Nicely played, Solo. You and I need to have it. Just needs to be an Alex and Brian show.
Oh.
We will completely disenfranchise the entire franchise. It's going to be great. I
wish they'd have had the camera on me in the last one when Leia was floating through space. I wish they would have aimed
it
back at
me. I still haven't seen it.
Don't. Oh, you need to. It's so bad.
I saw Star Wars, Return of the Jedi, and one Empire Strikes Back when I was a kid. Saw them each once. That was enough. I haven't seen anything since. I don't
Those
care.
Were the good ones.
They
were the better ones.
I don't care about anything that they've come out with since.
Yeah. So you spent a lot of time in your room playing with a lightsaber.
You never saw Jar Jar Binks?
No.
Yeah. Well, this last one. Okay, let me ask you. Did you, by any chances, happen to waste your money and here we go, whatever. You didn't happen to waste your money or time. And goddamn, I'm going to bring this fat turd up into this thing. Because I hate Peter Jackson. And if he ever listens to this, screw you, dude. The Hobbit trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a 90-page book made into like 9.5 hours worth of movie, right? That last Star Wars movie, dude, was the Hobbit equivalent. It was just filler upon filler upon filler.
I gotta think it was even worse.
Like that whole scene from The Hobbit when they're floating through the rapids in the barrels, and I'm like, oh great, you just came up with a theme park ride for the stupid movie franchise. And like in the Star Wars thing, it's like let's run these animals through a casino. Oh, that's never been done before. Awesome, way to go! It was every bad thing about Star Wars thrown into 2.5 hours.
Mm.
Horrible, dude. Speaking of Jaws, I want to see Jaws come in there and eat half the cast.
That'd be awesome.
Pay to see a crossover,
especially the star. Why does the star never get knocked off in this show?
I mean, almost because wait though, well, not a sub star, I guess. Well, although when Leah floated through space,
Jesus,
the audible groan in that theater when we were there, it was like the whole place in unison went,
What the hell's
going
so
on?
So you actually
here?
Paid money to go see this in the theater?
Nope, I didn't. I had Alex and Brian go, don't do it. Okay.
We warned you. We took a bullet for the team. I'm sorry. Wait, we took a blaster for the team.
As soon as she was floating through space, I looked over at my wife and I was like, "Are you shitting me?"
What the fuck? You guys didn't just stand up, walk out?
No, because I figured, you know, there'd be something damn it, even take better it
for 10
than
bucks
that.
A piece.
My kid turns and looks at me. This is the world's most undying Star Wars fan, right? And I'll never forget that he nudges me as she's floating through space. He looks at me. He goes, "God damn it!"
And I've just been duped.
Damn you! Walt,
it's like, and here it is. It's like I'm looking at this kid and going, "Yep, you're 14 years old. Your childhood is completely screwed at this point."
You now know the curtain's been pulled.
I was like, of all the dopey things, I'm gonna. And the pose they had her in was just like, really. We're way off topic now. Anyway, so what is the pro touring equivalent of Leia flying through space car wise in the last 5 years? Go.
2014 Camaro.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to say the new one. Have you seen the 19 Camaro?
No.
Yeah, they look just like the 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18, don't they?
It looks just like the Charger does currently.
It's really?
Like they stole the front end of the Charger and slapped it onto a Camaro.
So is the 2019 Charger going to look like the 2018 Camaro?
It's going to look like the the missing Camaro years. It's going to look like, it's going to look a 2000.
Was that four?
2004 Camaro. Yeah. You know, yeah. A Berlinetta from 2004. Well, so. Let's try to find, okay, constructively speaking, though, because we never want to be negative, and I think we pulled a lot of constructive criticism out of this. As far as Street Machine of the Year goes, I think we're in agreement. It would be really cool to do this, and it'd be a hell of a commitment for anybody building the car for this, but literally a year-long competition.
So build the car and then participate for a year.
A series of events scattered through the year, starting at SEMA and ending at SEMA.
Nice.
And one of the ideas I had for this, because, you know, I want to do something philanthropic, that I think there should always be good coming out of anything like this. There would be a ton of money to be made on, residuals from, TV shows, ad campaigns, and things like that. Why not take a percentage of that and put that into things like a scholarship fund for a trade school? You know, yeah, offer that over the year. Maybe have the winners of each event, they get to choose, you know, whatever cause they're going for that. Maybe it's even a thing where you got to think, in our industry, if you're a pro builder, there's not really a hell of a lot of opportunity to provide for yourself or your family with any kind of a retirement plan.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know, a lot of guys, sure, you can have a cool IRA going on and things like that. I think, you know, maybe provide some of those funds to start up some kind of a weird, a retirement or an emergency fund, where if you've got a one guy shop, say, and I don't want to mention names, but say you're a one man builder someplace, you're cranking out some cool cars every year, and something, you get hurt in your shop, maybe have an accident at the shop burns. Yeah, your insurance is going to cover part of that, but a lot of stuff isn't going to be covered back. It'd be kind of cool to have something to dip into like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, most people can't recover from that.
Exactly. And think about how many great shops get wiped out.
You're right. But as I was sitting here thinking, there's got to be, we talked about the Street Machine having the quarter mile and the autocross and this and that. Could there be a judging category where it's dollars spent, where the more money you spend, the less points you get?
Everybody lighten up.
I mean, you can look at a car we're off tape, but what Scott's building versus what some of the other major guys are building, and look at the amount of money spent versus what you get versus, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine
how you do that though.
You don't tell them that that's part of the points deal, and it goes backwards.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
What do you got? What do you got in the car? Well, we're about this right here. Okay. You know, you write stuff down and
write it down.
You just lost 50 points. What do you mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Scott built it in his garage, you know, and
because that would stimulate guys going, okay, well, that if that's a consideration and that's a big factor, well, then I'm not going to spend a bazillion dollars, and I'm going to start really thinking about the way I could utilize a lot of stuff I already have or things that are already there. It starts to stoke the creativity a little bit instead of just firing up the checkbook.
Exactly, the whole, you know, necessity being the mother of, you know, invention. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure we're not far from the point where you could probably go into a catalog and build your pro touring car.
Pretty close.
Oh, yeah, I think we're beyond that. I mean, look at all the frames that are available. You can buy probably four or five different companies making complete frames.
Yeah. When they start manufacturing narrowed 69 Camaro bumpers that you can buy over the counter, then they will.
Oh, you ready for this? Are you ready for this?
Uh-oh.
No, what do we got?
Here it comes.
Okay, if you wanted to, say you did this, say you went to Dynacorn, you pick up a body. I take that Dynacorn body, I throw that on a Roadster Shop chassis.
Yep.
I could go to, I just had the name. Come on, I'll dig it out. Shit. They make carbon fiber bumpers for Camaros that are tucked and ready to be flush fit.
No show. Wow. It's all over, Alex.
Yeah, we're done.
You could buy.
Turn off the lights. Somebody grab the flag on your way out.
You could literally, dude, every piece of trim on that car you can buy repro out of a catalog if you wanted to.
Wow.
Yeah, every weather strip.
Yeah.
Then if you want to go through, and like I said, okay, so we'll do the Roadster Shop chassis. Okay, so chassis done, suspension done. You could go through Borla, buy a Bolton exhaust system.
For your LS.
For your LS that comes out of a crate that you could buy, you know, and then go to Bowler and get a transmission for it, buy a, you know, the rear end's already
Curry rear end, you know, Wilwood brakes.
Yep. Literally, that car, you would never have to set foot outside of your shop.
No. You order the whole interior from TMI. You have all that stuff all built up.
Yeah. Wow.
That's scary.
Yeah. It takes the fun out of it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty cold. There's no excitement. And so unfortunately, that's kind of what you're seeing. These guys are showing up with. And it's just like, I can't get into this build. I just can't. I look at it and I go, well.
You know what it is? It's like a kit car.
Pretty close. You could almost that's a good point. You could almost start calling these things kit cars.
Oh no, we can't call them kit cars. They're continuation or tribute cars.
I'm sticking with kit car.
Yeah, no doubt.
Just because I know it's gonna piss people off.
If you came to me tomorrow and you said, "Hey, I will give you a Lamborghini Mira kit car to start with," oh dude, I'd build the shit out of that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because nobody has one.
Right.
Maybe, dude, okay, if we could, oh my God, if we could find a way to make some money for round six, how great would it be to show up for Street Machine of the Year with a goddamn Lamborghini Mira?
Oh, jeez. With an LS.
With an LS.
Of course.
Because it's got to finish.
Twin turboed LS or, yeah, you know, the blower motors or something.
On a Volkswagen Beetle Pan.
No, but not a real one, though. We're going to mill our own out of billet.
And it's got to have a sling axle.
Just because,
you know, it's been probably 6 or 8 years, but there was a kid that lived down the street from me who in high school hand formed a steel body. He bought a Lamborghini Diablo kit car. And when it came, he was so disgusted with it, of course.
Yeah.
He ended up duplicating every panel out of steel, and he built himself a steel Lamborghini Diablo.
Oh, damn.
Never made it to paint that I saw, but the car was absolutely dead nuts perfect.
So proportionally, he got it right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he nailed it. You know, I mean, the kit car wasn't even close, of course.
Yeah. He built it on a diamond plate, but it looked pretty good.
We need to do a rat rod Lamborghini.
On a diamond plate.
I've seen BMWs.
Rat Borghini. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, that's so wrong and trite.
Rat Borghini. Oh, dude.
Okay, we just need to find somebody to loan us one for, you know, a weekend.
No.
I've got spray cans.
When I need you to source us a Pontiac Fiero. We're gonna build it off of that.
Why don't we use a square body?
Jeez.
if we're gonna jump the shark, man, let's just use a square
Lamborghini that's about a foot and a half wider than it should be. That'd be so awesome.
It'll handle awesome, man. So now you got two sets of 335s on the back.
Oh, tandem. Dude. Yes, because you want somebody in the crowd to get impaled by a piece of, piece of diamond plate that flies off that big rear wing.
You know, the thing that's sad is, some people are going to go nuts over it. That's the coolest thing I've ever seen. Shut up.
Diesel powered, so we're just rolling coal through
the auto. I was going to say, it's got to be a forklift motor out of a diesel forklift motor like those goofballs out of Vegas build.
A 3BT. It was a 4BT. We just cut one of the cylinders off.
It's in the center console.
Just keep us warm on summer day. Shit.
Why don't
Are we done, guys? Are we done?
I need to go. Yeah, I got super early.
Alrighty, guys. Well, this was fun.
It was fun.
Oh shit.
So how are we going to wrap this up? We'll just wrap this up with, hey, so, yeah, that's where it's...
Yeah, don't edit that part out.
The moral of the story, don't build a million-plus-dollar Pro Touring Camaro. No, right. Can't.
Expect us four guys to like it.
Just know, if you park that in the fairgrounds, we're watching and we're judging.
Yeah, that's right. You've already been judged.
Maybe that's how we give out our award. We pull up with the Rappergini. Only difference being that we're not going to use Lamborghini doors. We're going to have our doors open regular, so this way we can knock them into the side.
They'll open up tailgate style, where you've got to step onto the door to get in.
I was trying to come up with a way we could leave a door ding on the cars we're giving the awards to.
Oh yeah,
yeah, that'd go over well.
It's just a door ding sticker. It's kind of like the bullet hole thing, but it's a door ding sticker. it just goes on, a static sticker thing. You lay it on there.
Holy shit, that's funny.
We need to come up with that.
That'd be great.
You're welcome.
Nicely done.
Walk all over SEMA and just slowly just stick them on everybody's cars.
Holy shit.
Oh, that'd be fucking good.
I have several different ones, rock chip and body crease, and we need variety,
What if we just take a bunch of raisins and sprinkle them on a car so it looks like it's like we just left behind the trail of the Rappergini?
Yeah. Little chocolate sprinkles are on top of donuts. Look like that poop.
So our main sponsor is Raisinets. Is that what you're saying, Dennis?
Nice. It's the only award that gives you hantavirus. It'll be great. Holy shit. Oh. Yeah. So it's going sideways late. So wrapping this up, though, I think by all means, man. Obviously, we're due for a change. We're due for a renaissance in this whole car building thing. And it'd be interesting, when we get this on the website, obviously the comments will be open. I'd be interested in seeing what people have to offer or say on this. And I hope it sparks a conversation. I mean, if you think we're off base, tell us. If you think we got something good.
We'll ignore you, too.
Well, exactly. We didn't even listen to ourselves.
If I listen to this next week, I may not agree with anything I said. So,
Yeah.
I'm not going to agree with anything you said. That's for sure.
That's true. Yeah. Just remember, my opinion of you is none of your business.
Nice. Right.
The other thing I'm going to agree with you on is maybe coming tacos? Up with a tortilla machine. Yeah.
Oh, dude, a CD player, when you push the button, it injects its fresh corn tortilla.
Oh.
Now
wow,
we're talking.
This went crazy. So, if you've got anything to add, comments to make, please do so over on our website at www.round6pod.com, or look for us. We'll be the page that's on Facebook that's ignored by 3.5 million other people. you can find us there. like I said, any input on that would be great. I just would love to hear your thoughts on what you guys think as far as Street Machine of the Year. Where's it at? Where's it going? What could make it better?
And tell us if you think we're totally wrong.
Yeah. By all means.
I'd love to hear your opinion. Absolutely. Really would.
I was married for a while. I'm used to that. I got scar tissue built up. Yeah, so all that said, I mean, you guys, hey, thanks for making it kind of a fun one. This is a different thing for us. Kind of keeping it all in the family, as it were. It wasn't creepy at all. You know, because as we say here, if, you know, why go down the street when you can go down the hall?
That's why I never understood why when you said if you can't keep it in the past, keep it in the family. But now that makes sense. Things you learn with Brian.
Alrighty. Hey, as always, though, to my two dads and our five other listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll catch up with you guys next time. Somehow, through all of the turmoil and flotsam and jetsam, I remain Brian.
Yeah, I'm still Brad.
And I'm still Alex.
I'm still Eric, because nobody will adopt me.
We'll talk about that.
Thanks, Dad.
Your taco, bro.
Yeah, could talk to your two dads about that, would you?
Hey, guys. You guys have a good evening.
All right.
I'm out. Right. I'll talk to you later.
All right, I gotta go.
All right, bye.
Bye. All right,
thanks again for listening, and be sure to keep up with us gearheads over on our website at www.round6pod.com. And if you'd like to, be sure to follow along with us over on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Subscribers to our e-newsletter have access to expanded content such as tutorials, uncut interviews, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes footage. It costs nothing to subscribe, and you can do so over on our website at www.round6pod.com.